Good morning. I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and welcome to Policy Matters, WJCT's quarterly radio program that takes a close look at public policy issues that matter to you and the future of our city and nation. First Coast Connect and Melissa Ross will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Thanks for being with us. Tomorrow, July 1st, Jacksonville will have a new mayor, a new city council, and a new city council president. They'll be facing serious challenges, but there's a real sense of optimism and hope for the future. On today's program, we're very pleased to have Greg Anderson, the incoming president of the Jacksonville City Council. Greg is in his second term on the City Council, has spent 25 years in the financial services sector, is a senior private banking officer at EverBank, and we will be speaking to Mr. Anderson about that optimism about the future, but also those challenges. If you'd like to join today's conversation, give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. Greg, welcome to the program. We're glad to have you.
Good morning, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. And first of all, congratulations on your election as president of the City Council here in Jacksonville.
Thank you.
And because of the size of this budget and because of consolidated government, a lot of people don't really recognize it, but this legislative body is one of the most important in the state of Florida. $1 billion general fund budget, nearly $5 billion consolidated government budget. So the first question is, as the incoming president starting tomorrow, what are your top priorities that you see in, during this term, your one-year term as council president, and what you see for the future?
Sure. Thank you, Rick. Again, thank you for having me this morning. And it is an exciting time, I think, for Jacksonville. The new mayor will take office July 1st, as will all the council members, including 11 new city council members. And each one of those will bring a new energy and a new vision to their job. So I'm looking forward to working with them. Of course, the first job is to get the new 11 council members seated. And over the last several weeks, we've been working very hard on that. They'll be able to move into their offices this week, which is great. It's kind of moving day down at City Hall.
Particularly tomorrow, I take it.
Yeah. Boxes are everywhere and paintings are all over the place. And they're all very anxious to get in, and I'm happy for that. So we wanted to get them in place, and we spent a lot of time training. You've heard a lot about that. The other thing is we went ahead and got the committee assignments out earlier than usual. Normally that doesn't happen until early July, but I wanted to go ahead and let them know the committees that they would be serving on. They could go ahead and ask questions, really kind of understand their schedule. So a lot of my effort over the last 3 weeks has been spent in making sure they're seated. And I'm going to let you know that I've met each and every one of them. We've got a great council, and you can expect great things from the Jacksonville City Council.
Greg, it seems like in starting tomorrow as the incoming president that Jacksonville has a bit of an opportunity to do something that's been a bit challenging at the national, state, and recently at the local level, and that is the relationship between the executive branch and the legislative branch. Certainly nationally, one of the big topics of conversation is the challenge between Congress and the president. As recently as last week, quite frankly, with some vetoes coming down and also with the expansion of Medicaid issues, some challenges with the executive branch and legislature at the state level. And here recently, some challenges. Certainly as council president, starting tomorrow with 11 new city council members and a new mayor, there's sort of this opportunity for a fresh start here in Jacksonville. Can you comment on this sort of relationship, this relationship between the executive and legislative branches and what it means to the future for Jacksonville?
Sure. And Rick, you, of course, know this as well as anybody. I think if we can create an environment where the executive branch and the legislative branch is working together on a vision, a unified vision for our community, Jacksonville's better served. And you know, during the last 4 years, the relationship between the mayor and the city council has been sort of up and down. And I think in many ways I wish that hadn't happened, but it's we've got a new day, and so when I have been in conversations with Lenny and Mayor-elect Curry, excuse me,
yeah, and you could drop the elect part tomorrow about this time,
that's
but yes,
right. he's very excited about this opportunity, and I am too. So one of the things that I think we can do to work on, or one of the things that we can work on, is communication between the two parts of government, And you need to take a break now.
Okay. I was just going to mention to our listeners that you're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT. Okay. And we're very pleased to have Greg Anderson, the incoming president of the Jacksonville City Council, with us. If you have a comment for the incoming president, or if you have a question for incoming council president Greg Anderson, give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. No, I was going to say, Greg, you mentioned about the sort of up and down, the sort of strain. It isn't unique to Jacksonville,
right?
But it is a challenge, and certainly one of the great opportunities during your presidency. You and Lenny DeMauro start together, of course, and how you start off is important. But this whole notion of this collaboration, communication, cooperation between the two branches, many people believe is a really critical for Jacksonville at this point.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Again, if we can create a unified vision where we're all working together, I think we're better off. And for my part, I'm going to be very interested in working with Lenny and his senior staff to make sure that communication is open. And we're going to do some things early on to make sure that everybody knows that's happening.
Well, Greg, in looking at that unified vision, what are the substantive, the top two or three policy issues, substantive issues that you believe during your term as president in the next 4 years are most important to the future of Jacksonville?
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Well, from my standpoint, public safety is the number one priority. I think we've seen a rise in violent crime in this community, and I think we're hearing that enough is enough, and I will support an increase in the police force, including the CSOs, the community service officers, bringing them back as well, because I think it's time for us to create safe neighborhoods, make sure that everybody feels safe in their neighborhoods. And so that's number one priority for me. I'm very excited about our new sheriff. Mike's very, very skilled, and I've had a chance to get to know him. My first day after his election, we had breakfast together, and he's got a great vision for this. So I look forward to supporting what he's going to be working on.
After public safety, what do you see as the top priorities?
Sure. We're going to drive to it's going to continue our drive towards financial stability. And I think that's something that has been a struggle over the last few years. This council has spent a lot of time looking at the revenue sources, looking at our expenses, looking at our debt structure. And we've put a great foundation in place so that this council can move forward. And I can comment a little bit about that more. Yeah. So I'm a financial person, so I'm a banker. I tend to look at the performance of the city and kind of in with those eyes. And sort of mid-year numbers show that our real estate taxes are basically flat. They're kind of where we expected them to be. But we are seeing a lift on state sales tax. So sales tax numbers are coming in better than we had thought. That's a very good thing. And our expenses, primarily because we have not filled a number of positions, are lower than expected. So we will start the year, I think, in a better position than we did last year.
Well, Greg, you've certainly identified, I know, very consistently with the recent campaigns, two very big priorities for the next upcoming year, public safety and the city's finances. We do have a few calls on the line, so I want to turn to some of our callers. We have Sandy who's calling in. And Sandy, welcome to the program. And do you have a question for our incoming City Council President, Greg Anderson?
I sure do. We've had news recently about people backing into their driveways and the license plate doesn't show. And it could be fined, and it's been through two committee meetings already approved. I wonder if the council has ever driven around Jacksonville. I live out on Black Hammock Island, and they would have a triple staff just to come out here to find everybody that parks backwards and to put a paper sign in your window if you back in. What if it rains?
Right.
That's my question.
Well, Sandy, thank you for your question. Appreciate your participation.
Sure.
Greg?
Sandy, thank you for calling in this morning. I appreciate your question. And I just want to give a little background to that. The bill was introduced by Councilman Warren Jones as his effort to reduce sort of junk cars that are sitting in people's front yards. And in certain parts of this community, that's a problem. And this was an effort that was part of the Blight Initiative. When it got to council, the same questions that you are asking, we asked. And I think the way the process works is that when we don't get the right answers, then we defer it. And in this case, the bill was not only deferred, it was sent back to committee for further refinement. So I hear your concern. I walked around my neighborhood, my wife and I, last night, and I noticed a couple instances where that would be a problem as well. So, Sandy, if you'll give us a little time to work this out, just know that Councilman Jones, he's a fabulous public servant, and his intention with that bill is really to try to address junk cars in certain neighborhoods. So if you can hang with us a little bit, I think we can figure something out.
Well, Sandy, thank you for your question. We have lots and lots of callers, and so I'm going to go to Jay. Jay, welcome to the program. Do you have a question for our incoming City Council President?
Yes, I do. On the issue of public safety, one of the big problems in Jacksonville is that the criminal justice system is very harsh, and harsh treatment creates more criminals because it ostracizes people more and tends to keep them in the cycle of arrest and escalating violence. Increasing police doesn't solve this problem because police show up after the crime happens, whereas things like better education and more job opportunities are really critical for breaking those cycles. So would the city council be in favor of something like Ban the Box, which allows people the opportunity to interview for jobs, or how are they going to use their influence to help or to influence criminal justice system, state attorney's office, sheriff's office, to work in ways that are help to get people out of that cycle of crime and arrest?
Jay, thank you, Jay, for your question.
Sure. Jay, again, thank you. And you're exactly right. Just an increase in our police force will not solve our problem. Really, it's a number of things that need to occur including improved economic opportunity for all the parts of our community. And I've been very supportive of legislation that's working its way through council that will provide some incentives for our enterprise zones, and enterprise zones are areas in our community that generally have higher unemployment. So the first thing that we want to do is make certain that all of our citizens have an opportunity for a good job. I think that helps. The second thing I'll say is the diversion programs that are available, I think, need to continue to grow. Things like Teen Court, you've seen our support of the Teen Court program. And so I do agree with you. It's really a couple things that we need to work on, and I think you'll see this council be supportive of that.
You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. We have several calls, but Greg, I do want to talk a little bit more about this public safety issue. Mm-hmm. One piece of the conversation was more officers on the street, which you mentioned before.
Right.
The other piece that was discussed in the city council campaigns this spring, as well as in the mayor's race this spring, was Jacksonville Journey,
right,
which is a multi-prong approach, sort of this pie approaches people talk about with prevention, intervention, and enforcement. Are you supportive of Jacksonville Journey's approach and increased funding for Jacksonville Journey also?
Yeah, I think the shorter answer is yes, but I think it has to be program specific. And I've said this pretty consistently, and that is that we need to understand which of the programs are most effective and really build those out. So the Journey had as its core the idea of sort of capturing these folks who might commit crime, capturing them early, and trying to work with them to make sure they don't get pulled into those activities, and those things we certainly will support, but I think we're going to need to look at it sort of program by program.
Well, public safety appears to be on the minds of some of our callers, so because we have AJ who has a question apparently on public safety also. AJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call. I'm AJ. I'm vice president of MADDAT here in Jacksonville, Florida. And I just want, he kind of just answered my question on, I know we need more police officers, but what we going to do to support community-based organizations that's trying to help our youth to prevent them from even getting into crime. I know he mentioned the Jacksonville Journey, but how y'all going to help fund some of these based, community-based organizations so we can help be a part of making our city safe for all residents and our youth?
AJ, thank you for your question. And you can certainly see, Greg, that several of our phone calls, public safety is on the minds of people. But one of the questions they ask, of course, that question, how are you going to fund community programs? How are you going to fund Better Jacksonville Plan? How are you going to, I mean, Better Jacksonville Journey, excuse me. That's
that one's been funded.
That's an old one. That's been funded. Yeah. More officers on the street. I mean, and so after the cheering stops, there will be the reality of facing some very serious budgetary issues on public safety as well as a whole host of issues we may be talking about. But what about AJ's question with regard to community programs and this whole issue of how do we invest in these programs beyond just officers on the street, which many believe is fundamental?
Yeah. AJ, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you listening. There is no doubt that an increase in police force alone will not solve our crime problem. It really is, I think, economic opportunity. But there are other initiatives that this council over the last 4 years has taken on. And there are things like our Blight initiative, where Councilwoman Lee identified areas of our community that we see higher crime rates and trying to work with our public works, cleaning up areas, making it harder for these criminal elements to set in. So there are a number of initiatives. So you want to talk at this point about the funding?
We can. I do have a couple more calls, I think, that are related to some of this. But yes, let's talk a little about the funding challenge.
Sure. Rick, that's the balance. That's what we've been working on for the last 4 years. And I think what you'll see very soon is a budget from the new mayor. We'll know an awful lot about his priorities on the 20th of July when he makes his budget address. So I would just like to say we probably ought to let him lead that conversation. But so we'll find out on the 20th.
I'm Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and you're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT. If you have a comment for our incoming council president or would like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. And John, you are on the air. Welcome to the program.
Yes. My name is John Macklin, and I came – thank you for taking my call. And I came to this country – in Jacksonville in 1951, 64 years ago, and in those days we only had two city governments, the one in the county and the city, and I think the people in the city government have done a pretty good job over the years. And by the way, you won't believe it, but I went to Jacksonville University in 1960.
We applaud you for that.
How about that?
That's a good thing.
Remember when it was Chaseville Road? Not University Road, Boulevard. And I went on to earn 3 degrees, later another degree in music history, a master's degree, and had taught at Florida Junior College. So I'm very appreciative of all the people that have worked in government. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Well, John, thank you for the call. I will comment. Coming to Jacksonville in 1951 and JU 1960, he saw consolidation in 1968.
Right.
He saw the Jaguars come in 1993 and kick off. So he's certainly seen a lot. And I have to agree with him on a little bit of a bias that we sometimes take it for granted, but I do think we have an extraordinary form of government. We have undergone extraordinary changes over the last – during his tenure here, certainly.
That's right.
But more to the point of the challenges we face – starting tomorrow in your term and the challenges we face, there are these serious budgetary issues and financial issues that we face as a city. And I think we have lots and lots of calls. But would you like to comment a little bit more on moving forward, how we best go about doing that and meeting those challenges, Greg?
Well, there are several components to it. So let me just start on the revenue side. The interesting thing about our government, and again, I look at it as sort of a business. We have relatively few revenue sources. And about 85% of those sources are directly tied to how our economy is doing. And you know that over the last few years, the economy didn't do very well. We've seen a recovery, but it takes a little while. Our revenue sources lag for good reasons, but they sort of lag. And we're starting to see some lift both on real estate and also on state sales tax revenues, as I've mentioned. So from a revenue standpoint, I think we are seeing some lift. We've been careful on the expense side. We're going to continue to do that. But I think the thing that I'd like to mention in closing is if you look at how we've maintained our infrastructure, it's pretty clear that over the last several years, we've not maintained our infrastructure in the way that we should have. One needs only to drive down a road and see a cone or potholes, in some of our drainage has not been maintained. So the challenge going forward is going to be creating the right balance of investment to make sure that the things that we as a government own that we're taking care of.
Greg, thank you. We have a question from Don, who I think has a financially related question. That's on pension reform. Don, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, good morning, Don.
This is a hard question, but basically, why did the council, the last council, pass pension reform before Lenny Curry had a chance to come in and do something?
Well, Don, thank you very much for your question. Pretty straightforward question.
Sure.
Why did the city council pass reform prior to July 1 with the not just Lenny Curry coming in, but 11 new council members? Maybe
right.
That's part of the answer, Greg.
Right.
So.
Okay. Thank you, Don. That is actually, I think, a great question. Just to put it in perspective, one of the very first meetings that we had, that my council had, this current council, we dealt with Mayor Payton's pension reform bill, and it was requested to be withdrawn by the new mayor, and we did that. For the next 4 years, the council struggled to try to come up with a proper solution, and I think I counted four different bills and a police and fire pension task force, which I sat on. So a lot of energy and a lot of education occurred. So I think the first answer is the sense that it's such a complicated issue that we didn't really want to give it to this next council. So many of our members had spent so much time trying to come up with the right solution that we were I think this council was set on trying to get something done.
Greg, I think you make a really good point. If you go back to the Payton years, actually, even before his legislation, he'd been working on it for 3 years.
Right.
You had 4 years during the Brown administration. And as one of the practical aspects of this, certainly, apart from the merits, and certainly the reform package had improved each time it came before council,
right,
was this whole idea that if it went beyond July 1, there would be the re-education of 11 new city council members, more negotiations, and the distinct possibility of very, very significant delay when a bill on the merits worthy of consideration was before the council. So I think you make a really good point, and it really was very challenging in terms of the timing. But for 4 years, we've been struggling with it. It would have been pretty
right.
challenging to place that onto a whole new city council, a whole new mayor coming
right.
in.
And the bill that we passed out creates a stability for the community that I think we needed to create. But you know, even more than, I mean, it'll save $1.5 billion over 30 years. So that's really excellent. But we also know that as we begin to hire new public safety employees, that they'll be hired in under a new retirement plan. So there were a lot of positives, I think, for this agreement.
There was, and maybe later in the program we can touch on it, certainly
sure.
some big challenges on funding, on how the city's going to fund the unfunded liability,
right.
part of the agreement of $350 million over the next 13 years to pay that down. So that can be a part of the discussion. But we have several phone callers. We have Donna from Avondale who has a question for our incoming city council president. Donna, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. This call has to do with policy And I'd like to ask Mr. Anderson, as the incoming president, a question about his approach to policy, specifically ethics policy. My understanding is that the ethics policy for the city of Jacksonville requires council members to recuse themselves in any vote where there is an actual or perceived conflict of interest. We have a proposed legislation from Councilman Clark, and that legislation is 2015-360. That legislation is proposed on behalf of John Surface of Everbank. He is an executive vice president. That legislation has been supported by Robert Clements, the head of Everbank. And that legislation seeks to close what is public land and a public access in Avondale to the St. John's River and turn that property over to John Surface. And I wanted to know whether Mr. Anderson will be recusing himself. We know that this issue has been brought up to Mr. Anderson, and it is my understanding that he will not recuse himself from that vote. And I'm just curious as to how that reconciles with the policy.
Donna, we appreciate you calling in today. Greg, I'm not familiar with the legislation. Would you like to comment?
Absolutely. Good morning, Donna. I don't know where you got your information on that. It's not accurate. Over the past 4 years, there have been four or five instances where I have recused myself from a vote. That's a normal thing, and there's a process in place for it. And what I do is, of course, meet with the general counsel if I have any questions about whether I would have a actual or a perceived voting conflict. In the case of the Van Wert closure, I do believe that I have a conflict, and I will not be voting on that.
Donna, thank you for your question, and Greg, thank you for your very direct answer. You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT 89.9 FM. I'm Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. We are going to take a short break. We are talking to incoming president of the Jacksonville City Council, Greg Anderson. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
New name, new look. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Afternoon keynote speaker Dinah Jordan's motivational messages ring loud and true about how we can make the choice to be happy, finding the funny in your life, taking responsibility for your own health, ways to bust stress, and in doing these four things can make a happier, healthier, more productive you. Good for You Girls Day Out is hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to wjct.org/goodforyou.
Join us for the radio variety show that celebrates the culture, art, and history of Northeast Florida.
Wake up in the morning, yeah.
Swamp Radio features musicians, poets, playwrights, and interviews that tell the unique story of our home.
My idea was to take them to the epicenter of Southern cooking, the Waffle House.
She do best is most everything.
Swamp Radio, Saturday night at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back to Policy Matters here on WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and we are very pleased to have as our guest today the incoming president for the Jacksonville City Council, Greg Anderson. Mr. Anderson has been addressing a wide range of issues in the first half of our program on public safety and city finances and the relationship with the executive branch, and we appreciate all your phone calls. If you have a question for Greg Anderson, please give us a call at 549-297, 549-2937, or if you have a comment and would like to join the conversation. We have a very patient caller. In Nancy, who was patient enough to hold through the break, and so I immediately wanted to go to Nancy for her question. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I wanted to comment that Donna's question about ethics was really, really a good point. And I applaud Mr. Anderson. He does not sound like a politician, which in my mind is a good thing because that means that he's probably honest.
Well, painting with a pretty broad brush, but I hear you. We hear
you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I happened to know someone that was running for the school board in Jacksonville about 8 years ago. And before she was even elected, she was offered kickbacks from different companies. And I wanted to remark that the sheriffs, the firemen, and police do a hard and dangerous job. Very hard, very dangerous. And today's culture is doing nothing but giving them crap. And I think it's a crying shame when people that are devoted their lives to helping other people in society are not getting support from the administration. I think I'm ranting a little bit here. But
Nancy,
thank you for your comments, some wide-ranging comments, a compliment in there, but also some concerns.
Well, for Nancy, thank you. Thank you very much. So you bring up a great point, and that is about our public safety workers. They are the first responders. They're the ones who are called in to go into buildings that are on fire. They're the ones that are called to come and into dangerous places and dark places, and they're trained to do it. So you're exactly right. We should honor our public servants in that way. And that's one of the real drivers that I haven't had a chance to mention about pension reform yet. And from my standpoint, I've seen the morale in some of our public safety forces not at a level that I think, you know, it should be at. And a lot of that, to me, was just the pure uncertainty over, you know, what their retirement benefits were going to look like. These folks have worked, many of them, for, you know, for their whole career. And so they wanted to have some certainty. And so one of the other drivers for getting the pension deal done was to provide some certainty in that.
Well, Greg, let me ask you this and talk about pension reform for a second, sort of the phase one reform. Certainly the phase one that's now been passed addresses the pension benefits for future employees. It addresses pension benefits for current employees. It does some governance issues. But it also provides, and this will be the phase two question, this $1.6 billion unfunded liability, the desire of the city rightfully to want to pay it down, and an agreement that over the next 13 years, $350 million will be paid by the city to pay it down. And it's phased in with $5 million during your term, during this budget coming up, and over and above the usual contribution towards that $350, $10 million next year, $15 million in the third year, and then in your last year as city council, $32 million, the fourth year of the Curry administration, and for the next 10 years, it'll be at $32 million. And part of the question is, and this is one of the great challenges we certainly face, is in terms of earlier in the program, we were talking about funding for new police officers, community programs on public safety. What is the discussion regarding how we go about funding? This is sort of the phase two piece of this conversation, funding the paying down of this unfunded liability.
Right, right. So you're right. The unfunded liability is generally about $1.6 million for the Police and Fire Pension Fund, and the strategy that was outlined by the task force, the Police and Fire Pension Fund Task Force, was that we make an extra payment. It's just like making an extra payment on your home mortgage. If you make one extra payment a year, your debt would be reduced dramatically. And so that's really what our plan is. And so the funding portion is going to be critical. The first few years, you know, I think, you know, we can probably handle the extra contribution. But what, you know, down the road, the administration is going to have to deal with the larger increase that comes in the fourth years, and we'll see how they handle that. The sources of revenue could come from just pure economic opportunity, I mean, economic activity. You know, we are seeing a resurgence on many areas, and so we could see a natural rise in our revenues based on that. But I think at this point, again, we'll need to see where Mayor-elect Curry goes on that.
You're hearing from Greg Anderson, the incoming president of the Jacksonville City Council. He takes office tomorrow, July 1st, along with 11 other new city council members, 19 overall, and a new mayor. Tomorrow is a big day in Jacksonville, and we're very pleased to have Greg on the show. You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT. If you'd like to join the conversation or make a comment or have a question for Greg Anderson, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. And we have Amos on the south side, who's been very patient on the line. Amos, welcome to the program, and do you have a question for Mr. Anderson?
Yes, I do. Earlier, this woman called about that property in Avondale that has been sitting vacant for years right on the river. Has that property been properly appraised by the property appraiser over the years?
Do you want me to answer it?
Yes, Greg, if you do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Amos.
So it's an interesting kind of end of a road, and there is an easement on that. So if you walked out there, it really just has an easement which allows for some drainage to go through it. So our city needs to be able to have access to it. So right now it's city property, and I'm not aware that any appraisal has been done. There was some conversation in some committees about getting an appraisal, but I'm not aware if anything's been done yet.
Amos, thank you for your call. And Lori, you've been patiently waiting on the west side. Do you have a question for Mr. Anderson?
I have a question for everybody, and it's more of a policy.
Okay.
It's more of a policy thing, and sure. It's something that I've noticed is on our spreadsheets for the city. For example, Council passed a non-ad valorem fee for everybody in the city. Well, not everybody pays it, number one, because if you're a church, you're exempt. Secondly, is as you look at your spreadsheets for how you decide what you're going to charge for your ad valorem fees and your interest and your fees for collecting the fees, you guys are collecting as much money on late fees as you are on the fee itself. And all from my understanding, all that money is being skimmed off from other computer spreadsheets, basically. And because you use outside entities that are mostly for foreign profit corporations, you're giving away half your money.
Well, Lori, thank you for your comment on the budget. I'm not sure exactly. I guess there's a concern over revenue sources. But let me just say this by way of background. Certainly, in our $1 billion general fund budget, almost half of that, $500 million, is ad valorem revenue.
That's right.
And we know very well that the rising property values or declining property values are a big issue. And you mentioned earlier in the program, relatively flat. Mm-hmm. Another $150 million that a lot of people don't recognize is state shared revenue. And
that's
you
right.
Mentioned that sales tax goes up around the state. We can actually, and we've seen a little bit of an increase in that revenue, mm-hmm. a contribution from the JEA, another $114
right.
million starting tomorrow. So there's about five or six fundamental sources that make up that $1 billion.
Yeah.
So Greg, as we move forward, you're the banker in the financial industry, mm-hmm. and I think you commented on this earlier. We do have an opportunity with economic growth, both in terms of consumer mm-hmm. activity on the sales tax side and on ad valorem and a new construction in particular, which was a boom years
right.
ago, to try to put us in a position to fund some of these things and how some of that revenue comes in and what it can be used to fund. Would you like to comment on that?
There were a lot of questions.
There were. So, I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're right, Rick. Our revenue sources are highly concentrated. There's about four of them that represent 85%. The largest
yes.
of those are real estate taxes. There's no doubt about that. And so as the city suffered through a recession, what you saw was that our revenue sources were impacted as well. I think the comment that the former caller mentioned, I think, was the storm water fee. I think that's what she was talking
about. Maybe that's what that was directed towards.
I think that's what she was talking
about. She mentioned ad valorem, but I think she meant the fee, yes.
And that, and we did, I also serve on the CIP committee, and so we did spend a great deal of time over the last months sort of looking at the way that fee is being used. And what we're trying to do is make sure that it's being used as it was intended, which is to improve our stormwater system. And in some cases, it was being used for sort of operations that maybe it shouldn't have been. So we're trying to correct that.
Well, we have a lot of callers. I want to go to David. David, thank you for being patient. And you have a question for Greg Anderson.
I do. First, I want to say congratulations to both you and Mayor-elect Curry, and I'm excited at the prospect of new blood down there. I live in St. John's County, but we're all going to benefit vicariously from Jacksonville's success. My question is, once you get done with all the need-to-do stuff that you've listed, public safety and financial things, what's on your list of things that you really love to do? What are your aspirations a couple of years down the road to take Jacksonville to the next level?
David,
that is an awesome question.
That is a great question.
And you just need to move to Jacksonville.
Yeah, we do need to move David to move to Jacksonville, but a great question. And Greg?
Sure. Thank you, David. That's wonderful. From my standpoint, the what I'd like to see is our downtown become vibrant. Really, you know, Shot Khan talks about it in terms of a world class venue, and so there are probably four or five major initiatives that are going on right now for our downtown. And any one of those, any one of them, in my opinion, are game changers. So the second thing, and more of a long term initiative from my standpoint, is what I call workforce development. And here's the big picture from my standpoint. If you look at Jacksonville, I believe Jacksonville is a city of the future. And if you look at a city of the future, companies are going to want to locate here because of our climate, because of our quality of life. We are a year-round economy, and so I believe we're very attractive to businesses that want to locate here and grow here. And so if we're going to continue to grow, then we need to make sure that we have a workforce that is ready, trained, and available and can kind of plug in to these new companies. And you'll see there are some excellent initiatives that are going on around the city to focus on that.
David, I want to thank you for your question.
And great question.
Thank you for your answer on downtown and workforce development. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT, WJCT's quarterly radio program that takes a look at public policy issues that are important to the future of our city, our state, and our country. We want to thank you for joining us. Please give us a call if you're interested in making a comment or have a question for Greg Anderson at 549-2937, 549-2937. David, you have a question for Mr. Anderson. Welcome to the program.
Hi, this is David.
Yeah, David.
First, I want to comment on a couple of things you said. So as I look at the future of Jacksonville, there's three major issues that need to be dealt with. You mentioned one, downtown. It's clearly one, to become a world-class city. The second one to me is our education system. Mm-hmm. And then the third is this pension reform. And I really want to comment a little bit more or elaborate a little bit more on pension reform because I'm a little disappointed in the plan. I appreciate how difficult it is for you guys. This is a problem that's been going on for a long time. But one of the things you guys said as I'm driving down the road listening to you today is that the economy's improving and that's going to help. But it seems to me there was an administration that bet on the economy a long time ago that put us in this fault. That the stock market would continue to do what it would do. If anybody knows anything about the stock market, everybody should know it was up and then it comes down. The question is $1.6 billion unfunded liability in that you said the city's paying a portion. Well, the city doesn't produce anything. I mean, the taxpayers are paying a portion. Mm-hmm. And I'm disappointed that the negotiations, while I appreciate the difficult job police and the fire have. I also know that people in the private sector, and Greg, I'm not sure what your background is necessarily, but I don't have a guaranteed 8%. I don't have a drop plan. I can't retire after 20 years. So I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more on some of those challenges.
Okay. David, thank you for your call. He has two parts, I think. One is the challenges of the pension plan, but his other about economic growth helping to meet these. I think he's certainly right on the first part that economic growth alone won't be enough to solve the sort of the math problem we face in terms of city finances. There's a significant math problem in terms of revenue and the challenges we face on the funding side. So his point is well taken, but he does go into a little bit more elaboration, very articulate on three areas: downtown, education, and pension reform. And he comments, Greg, on his notions on pension reform in this package and how it moves us forward.
Well, thank you again for the question. The pension reform, again, provides financial stability for this community going forward. When we looked at the escalating cost of the pension contribution, it was a hockey stick. And so the idea that we could level out the city's obligation, and give you an example, this year alone, out of $1 billion budget, $200 million was spent on the pension contribution. So the first thing is, it was really important to draw a line around that and really provide some certainty, both from a financial standpoint and also to our retirees. Second thing is that the way that we created this, or the way that the discussions were around this reform package, was that it was a shared sacrifice. And so what's not really gotten a lot of press here is the fact that the current employees will be paying more for their retirement plan. And then the final thing I would say is that over the long haul, as we bring new employees on, they're going to be being brought into a retirement plan that is more normalized according to more sort of private sector background. So you asked my background, and I'll just tell you that I'm a banker. I've been a banker my whole career, and so thank you.
Greg, thank you very much for the comments. I think your comments on shared sacrifice and moving it forward are really well taken. I do think the caller reflects sort of a frustration in the community,
right,
that there's no perfect solution.
Right.
If anyone was looking for a perfect one, it would have been pretty difficult to have gotten that.
Right.
But overall, you take a look at the package as you've outlined it about where it takes us, and appreciate your comments. We do have a call from Sherry. Sherry, thank you for your patience. Do you have a question or comment for our incoming council president?
I do. Good morning. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
And really excited about the future of the city.
Thank you.
I want to ask, I'm involved in a few projects that are very art, culture, and history oriented, and I want to know how important you think those aspects of our downtown, specifically that's where my projects are located, how important it is to preserve the history and to champion the arts and culture. Where does that fit on your list?
Very, very high.
Thank you.
Yeah, can I go ahead and
yes,
answer,
please?
Okay. So, if I mentioned quality of life, and I believe that quality of life is an economic driver for Jacksonville, and the arts and culture play a critical role in that. So, I've been very supportive of the arts and culture throughout my term, and plan to continue to be. As just background, I was the president of Riverside Fine Arts, which is a small performing arts organization, and I saw the impact that a very minor contribution made to really our community, and so I believe it's a very powerful force for the city.
Greg, we're short on time, but let me just ask you as we begin, before we wrap up,
sure.
At the beginning of the program, we talked about the fact that we do face some daunting challenges, but there mm-hmm. also is a spirit of optimism and some hope
right.
about what's coming. Do you like to comment on what you see are maybe some of the big opportunities we have as a community and as council president, the kinds of opportunities that you're looking for us as a community to take advantage of?
Sure. Rick, I've enjoyed being here. You're a great host.
Well, thank you.
There is, in my opinion, a sense of optimism. I was talking to Councilwoman Boyer, this is a month or so ago, and she sort of smiled. She said, I've forgotten what optimism felt like. And she's right. I think there is a spirit of in our community that you know, people are smiling, and we're starting to see a lot of energy around our community. And so I look forward to serving the city over the next 4 years, serving you as your council president this next year, and continuing to move the city forward.
Well, I do want to compliment both you and Councilwoman Boyer on your addresses last week at your inauguration on this whole new spirit of moving forward and the spirit of optimism. I think we're about out of time for today's program, so you've had the final word. Thank you for finishing on
Thank you, Rick. Enjoyed being here. Very
positive note. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Greg Anderson again and our callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. I'm Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and this has been Policy Matters on WJCT. If you missed any of today's show, you can find the podcast later today on iTunes. Melissa Ross and First Coast Connect will be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Thanks for listening. Thank you.